Hey everyone, and welcome back to The Advisor. Today's episode is a really meaningful one, especially with Father's Day approaching. So we're diving into the relationship between fathers, grandfathers, and children, and how multiple generations together can help shape emotionally strong, resilient, confident kids. Joining me today are two incredible guests. First, we have Dr. Josh Davis. He is the author of The Difference That Makes the Difference. He's an expert in psychology, performance, emotional intelligence, and human behavior. His work really focuses on helping people understand how connection, mindset, and emotional patterns influence the way we live and lead. Joining him is Perry Solomon. He's an entrepreneur, a mentor, grandfather, and the author of Grandpa Day: Nurturing Grit, Smarts, and Love in the Next Generation. So you're going to want to tune in because today we're going to explore what fathers uniquely provide, what grandfathers uniquely provide, why emotional presence matters more than perfection, how children are shaped by three generations, and what real legacy actually looks like. So Josh and Perry, it's so great to have you guys here. Thanks so much for being here today.
Good to be with you.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
So much fun. I'm so excited to dive into this conversation. Josh, I'm going to pick on you first. So, from a psychological perspective, what do you think is happening to families right now emotionally? Why does the conversation we're going to have today matter so much?
Well, there are a few things that are broad strokes that everyone is experiencing. Now, there are these books, The Anxious Generation, for example. Everybody knows about screen time. Everybody knows about, uncertainty due to AI. These are not mysteries to anyone. And I think what that does is it amplifies patterns that are always there, where, we might just be a little bit more distracted, a little bit less likely to pay attention, have a little bit more of that kind of those feelings going on inside that are hard to deal with, right? And so our triggers just come a little bit quicker. And the time that we might take to actually get to know somebody else's perspective, it just feels like there's less of it, right? So there's this squeeze that's happening. And then on top of that you've probably also seen, probably many listeners are aware of this firsthand, that men are feeling more and more isolated. That women are finding ways to continue to have groups and friends and text chains and so forth. And moms, know what each other's kids are doing. The dads are doing it on their own, and feeling quite isolated, and really just trying to invent what they're doing. Now, at the same time, there are these wonderful societal things that are happening where you have a lot of dads that really want to be full parents along and full partners along with the mom in the raising of the kids and figuring out how that works. And you have a lot of moms who really want that too. And so there is this interesting space where there's a big yearning to be able to step into these relationships as role models, as leaders, as parents, and a big desire to master yourself, right? And be able to control those triggers. Right? Or to really understand the other person. So these pressures are there at the same time that we're feeling kind of less time to do it. And the good news is there is a tremendous amount that everyone can do. And there's some changes we can all make very quickly when you start to understand how the mind works. And when you start to get the family harmonized and the household harmonized, everything kind of flows from there.
Yeah, absolutely. People have more desire than ever to understand themselves and grow in that way, which brings me to Perry. I'm curious, after what Josh just talked about, what personally inspired you to write Grandpa Day? Was there a moment that made you realize how powerful these generational roles can really be?
Yes, in fact, it was out of discussions with other folks my age who had a lot of trouble communicating with their grandkids, didn't know how to relate. One of them being my own brother admitted to me, "Hey, I just don't even know how to talk to them, right? And I realized that there was an issue that needed to be addressed in that I didn't hear it once or twice. I heard it a number of times of folks in my peer group that were just uncomfortable being around their grandchildren. And it felt so painful to me in that my greatest joy is the time I do spend with my grandchildren. And I wanted them to be able to experience that same joy and to deliver the value that they could deliver, starting with love, to their grandchildren. You know, it's interesting that one of my son-in-laws said to me, "All my kids want to know is that they're loved." Mm-hmm. And it's hard for fathers, for parents, to express love to their kids with so many distractions in the day. They've got to earn a living, they're involved in charities, they're involved in social networks. They've got so many things going on that it's very difficult to give that concentrated one-on-one time to their kids, especially when you've got two or three or four kids in the household.
No kidding.
To give undivided attention to one for an extended period of time becomes intensely difficult. And I
wanted the commonality of reasons why it was difficult for them to connect with their grandchildren. Was there a common theme?
That's an interesting question. I wouldn't say a common theme, but a common discomfort.
Yeah, I'm just curious where that discomfort comes from.
It came from not having systems, processes, methodologies in which to be with the grandkids and to make it a meaningful experience. And
right.
What I've attempted to do, and fortunately it appears succeeded, is to provide that map, that guideline as to how to carve out the time and what to do in order to open up those channels of communication and how to actively listen to your grandchildren and to understand them and to be able to craft a path forward to encourage them and to mentor them so that they can achieve all that they want to achieve in life.
Yeah, it sounds like a beautiful tool that would benefit a lot of people. Josh, do children today seem more emotionally overwhelmed or disconnected than previous generations, do you think?
You know, the feelings are the same, right? People have always had these feelings. It's a question of what's it applied to and what meaning do we make of it? I would say that whether it's more or less than in the past, and it probably is more, right? But who knows? No way to measure that, right? But it probably is more. They are feeling overwhelmed, right? And, you know, Perry mentioned active listening. And ultimately, I think what it comes down to, if people listening to this are saying, well, what's one thing I can take that's going to help me connect with my kids or my partner or my parents, right? And enable this family dynamic. People never stop craving the love of their family, right? And we all know that can be such a remarkable thing. If there's one thing that it comes down to, it's this, that whenever you're not connecting, whenever you're not getting the behavior you want, either from yourself or another person, there is a world in which that makes perfect sense. There is a psychological world in which that makes sense, right? People are always doing the best they know how, given how they think of themselves and what they think is possible and the emotional state they're in and their beliefs. So when you get into that world and you make sense of it, then you really can get somewhere. And that feeling overwhelmed is a big part of it. So you can, you know, if I try to get in, like, so I've got three kids and I love being a dad, but I still get frustrated and lose my cool sometimes, right? But I love doing it. And kind of like an elite sport. Like I love the process and I know I don't always win, right? I'm not always going to make it through the playoffs, but I do keep coming back and honing my game. And one of the things, here's an example. So my oldest was struggling with an assignment. I had to pick between, do I do Saturn or do I do Neptune, right? And we're just like, it doesn't matter, pick one, right? You're going to learn something, right? We're thinking that. We're just like, I don't know, why don't you pick Saturn, right? It's like, well, I don't know. And this keeps going back and forth. And we're going, a couple of weeks are going. It's just like, all right, wait a second. You got to pick something, And he's asking the teachers. And we're just thinking, what's going on? Why don't you just pick something, right? That's what's going on in our minds. And so I allow myself to just get into his mind for a moment. What is going on? Instead of just saying, what's going on? It's like, what is going on? That's a crucial difference in attitude that we can all take. And then when you do it, 100%. Everyone's capable of going. So I get into his head for a moment and I'm thinking, why, what is, and I realize as a 10-year-old, that's a big decision. He doesn't know if he's ever going to study a planet again. This is his big project. It's going to go for a month, which is a long time for a 10-year-old. And how do you decide something like that? And then it turns out, start to discover, well, how do you decide? So then I know what questions to ask because I'm getting into his mindset and feeling the stress of it. And I know what questions to ask. Well, how are you deciding? And then he shares and I learn he's trying to know the future ahead of time. What will be all of my feelings? What will be the outcome? What will it look like? I want it, once I know the future completely in both circumstances, then I can make a decision. And then I'm able also to teach him about decision-making. Right. And so you get in, but yeah, of course, it makes perfect sense. Anyone trying to make a decision that way, 10 years old or not, isn't going to be stuck. Right. But so you unpack that, you can get in there, and we're capable of it. There's many tools for doing that. When Perry talks about active listening, it's like noticing what's there and realizing maybe you don't know what's in the way, seeing them in that positive light and starting to ask, this is how we make these connections. And then so many opportunities open up. I was able to be a role model. I was able to help him enjoy the project. I was able to help him move on. We weren't at odds about it anymore. It's just that's the starting point.
You brought up a really important point in there, if I may, and that it's such our outer world is such a reflection of our inner state. Yeah. And so when you took the time to really understand from that emotional level of what the blockage was, then he was seen, then he was heard, and then there was able to be progress in what you were working towards. But we often view the world from the way we're feeling on the inside, which is something that not everybody quite understands. So I think that's absolutely fabulous. Well done on working through that for sure. So Perry, I wanted to ask you if you think that society really underestimates the emotional impact that grandparents can have on children.
Great question. I can't speak for society, but I can speak from my personal experience is that the folks that I interact with tend to really appreciate a grandfather that's involved and that cares and that spends the time. Right? The biggest issue that I see in terms of how grandfathers interact with grandchildren is that there's not a process in which they dedicate specific time. So in my case, it's Grandpa Day. I have one day a week that I spend with one grandchild and give them my undivided attention. And while I can't speak for society, I can speak for the folks I know greatly respect that somebody can do that, and the impact that it has on the grandchildren is just incredible. There is probably no other adult in their life other than a grandparent that can give hours, a whole day, or I just took a one-week trip with my granddaughter, just the two of us for a week. That's hard for a parent to do.
Right.
That's hard for anyone else to do. But a grandparent is in the fortunate position of being able to do that. And what value is that going to have for the child over the course of their life? Just incredible. So from that standpoint, everybody we talk to seems to really understand the value of that and appreciate it and hopefully learn from it.
You know, I wonder if I can follow up. You know, Perry, you mentioned, you know, that that's something that grandparents can do. And it's reminding me, though, that there's a lot of grandparents, including my parents, are thankfully, you know, able to be part of our lives and do some of these things, right? But I know that they resist. And I remember in your book, you saying that this is a common pattern, that they might resist because they don't want to step on our toes. And I have to say, as the parents, as the middle generation, we don't want our toes stepped on, but we keep wanting them to reach out and say, hey, we want to go and do something with the kids. And I think it's very much the same desire that everybody at all three levels wants, the grandparents, the parents, and the kids. We want to be understood and appreciated for what we're capable of right now. And if we're not doing something right, then, you know, we want the benefit of the doubt. So it's like we want my parents to come in and say, hey, can we take the kids and do something with them? And like, yes, please. That's wonderful. Right?
Right.
And if they think we should be doing something different with our kids, or, you know, or teaching a different lesson, or something needs attention, then yeah, we want that kind of appreciative inquiry. We want that those kinds of questions where they're trying to get into our mindset of how does it make sense what we are doing, instead of just, you know, because people are so afraid of giving feedback in any context. Like, oh, I don't want to. I'm good. This is going to blow up. I'm going to, right? But actually, that doesn't have to be the case. And we don't just have to have kid gloves on and say, I'll take my territory, you take yours. That's one solution. It can work. But we can get into it and start to say, okay, look, I'm seeing this behavior. Are you guys aware of that? Great. What are you already doing about it? Oh, okay. Well, that's better than what I thought of. Do you want any ideas? No, I don't right now. Okay, I won't share any. You know what? I changed my mind. I do want some, right? That kind of interaction is something that we can all learn to do. And I think people, when we have these family dynamics, we're craving that. You know, we want the support. We still want our parents' approval. Even, you know, if you can be in your 50s, you can be in your 80s, and your parents could have passed on, you still want their approval, right?
Yeah.
You know, it never stopped. You never stop wanting that. So, but then how do you do it? And then if the grandparents don't know how to ask, how we can learn as parents, how to take what they're saying and help them ask in the right ways also. You know, they can say, you know, this is really a problem. And it sounds like, oh, you're accusing me of not being aware that it's a problem, right? You know, and I can learn to come back and say, all right, wait a second. They don't understand the full context. They don't understand what's going on here. And I can say, I can just ask for some clarity. Tell me what you're thinking. Right. Mm. And there's a little bit of learning for me to trust myself. You know, I am an adult now, but these are all things we can learn to do. And if we just have this mindset that everyone's doing the best they know how, there is a way it makes sense. And let me start asking questions in a really thoughtful, appreciative way. We're going to be able to increase these dynamics. Parents can then support getting grandparents to take on these roles. Grandparents can be more comfortable stepping into these roles. Right. And I think that's something where I think sort of the two of us, when we were both, you know, that was where the connection happened when we were talking. And Perry said to me, is what you're talking about the same as what I've been calling, you know, appreciative inquiry is, I think, what you, the term.
Something
you use,
like that. Yes.
And so I asked him, instead of just saying yes, I said, well, what do you mean by that? Right. That's an example of this. I learned what he meant by it. And I said, yes, that is the same. right? And so
Yeah.
this I think is a cornerstone of how we all manage to end up getting the most out of these relationships.
100%. And I think it's so important to note that children pick up on that emotional energy of family dynamics, right? And so even if generations don't think that the kids are aware of it, they are. And so they can feel that. So if there's any kind of turmoil, I guess, or negative emotion, kids are going to feel that. And then they're going to pick up on, they're going to feel that way when they're with their grandparents, right? And then they're going to feel like something's wrong. Some of my favorite memories are with my grandfather and, driving in his car and him taking me out. And I feel like it strengthened our family because it was like just these moments that we got to spend together away from, your parents, which it feels kind of scandalous when you're young too, right? It's like, oh, grandpa lets me do this and I got to keep this a secret. But it gave me independence and it just showed me the importance of what family really means.
So, Lisa, one of my greatest joys is that when I'm with the grandkids, they can make decisions. In their normal life at school, when they're with their parents and the whole family, the decisions are made for them.
Right. That's a great point.
And when I'm alone, one-on-one with the grandchild, I ask them where they would like to eat. Meals are very important to me. That's kind of a cornerstone of a grandpa day is meals. Breakfast, brunch, lunch, dinner. Very important time for conversation, one-on-one conversation and active listening. So when they're very young, they don't know the world around them. They don't know as much about what they want, where they want to eat, what they want to eat. So I'll provide them alternatives. I'll give them three or four different choices to make, and they make the choice. As they get a little bit older, they know the world around them, they know the restaurants, they know the foods. They can make the choice without any guidance from me or any assistance from me. And it's very important to me that they feel like they're in charge. I tell them, it's your day. You're in
Right.
charge. I'm here to help you enjoy this day and get the most out of it. But it's your day. You're in charge.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. It gives that independence, and that connection piece. Josh, what do fathers uniquely provide emotionally then? If the grandparents is kind of like the, I don't know, the one that provides the children with that independence, what do you think the father's unique job is then?
I think I want to answer it two ways. One is I want to give you a straightforward answer of like, well, is there something that is really unique to fathers, right? And then, but I also want to answer it in a way where I'm saying, well, look, every context is different and nothing is really off limits, you know, that fathers don't have to limit themselves. But I do find that there is, it's funny, we joke about it, that there's different rules for dads than there are for moms, right? And we call it the dad pass. You know, dads don't have to know the names of all the kids in the school, right? There's no penalty for it. Dads don't have to remember birthdays. Dads don't have to, right? And then there's, of course, some other things in life, other areas of life where you don't have the dad pass, right? Where it might be the opposite. But when it comes to the family, there is often this dad pass. And what I have found is that there's a real positive, if you're looking at it in this positive way, while it does allow us to shirk responsibility in some ways, it also allows us to just kind of be in the moment and be present because we don't have to be tracking everything, right? That the dad is given a role where it's like, I can, yeah, I do need to step in and set boundaries, right? And that's expected, but that's expected of the mom too. But I also, you know, if I show up and I'm like, hey, it's tickle time, right? Or it's, you know, or let's go, you know, we're going for a hike right now, or these kinds of things. There's a freedom to do that, that dads kind of have. And that I think that, you know, it would be wonderful for moms to step into that more, but I don't know how many moms even want to. But I know that there's a lot of dads that really kind of love that time and love that relationship. And so the thing we have to learn to do is, how do I simultaneously be their friend and play and be the one that be someone they just want to hang out with and doing these fun activities and be able to set boundaries, right? And so how do I do that? Because I also have to be the guide. I'm not just playing, but I'm making sure we're safe on the mountainside. You know, I'm making sure that when we're tickling, nobody's smacking their head into the wall, right? I'm like, you know, these are the things to do. And I think there is an art to learning to be clear in your mind and consistent. That's really where the challenge comes from. It's how do I set boundaries without anger, right? How do I set boundaries without feeling like something has to be the case, right?
Right.
And so that's one thing that I'll do with dads is we'll work on identifying these triggers, these moments where I suddenly feel like something has to happen, right? Or I interpret the meaning of a certain behavior or a lack of stopping as disrespect, right? Or as meaning that this is going to take forever and I don't have forever, right? These kinds of thoughts then get triggered and then I lose it and then maybe I get mad, right? And then maybe the engagement doesn't end how I want it with the kid. And then maybe actually there's, well, we played a bit, it's now there's also this strain, right? And so I think what dads are kind of uniquely allowed to do is to be that playmate. And, you know, it would be wonderful if moms can more. And I don't think that they have to limit themselves from that. But I think it's a different set of challenges to getting to there, to really getting to embrace that side of things. But dads, it's like an invitation is there already, right? And so, but the challenge there is how do I then also have a gentle but firm way of communicating boundaries and not feeling like things have to be a certain way and I'm getting stuck and not having those mental interpretations that make it challenging. And those are things you can learn to change. I don't know anyone who hasn't been able to make some progress in that regard. So I think that's just sort of something we get to do as dads that's really special. You know, it just gets to be part of our everyday.
Absolutely. Perry, what do you think? Have you noticed a difference in how the role of father and grandfather influence children in different ways?
Most definitely.
Because you're both a father and a grandfather. So
yes.
You've been on both sides.
Very true. The difference is that a grandfather doesn't have to be a disciplinarian. Doesn't have to, Josh spoke about boundaries. Those boundaries are much looser as a grandfather. Mm-hmm. In that, hopefully, the grandkids are reasonably well-behaved and don't need strict boundaries just to be out in a museum on other activities like a maker fair or any of the many things that we do as grandparents with our kids. So the fact that you're not a disciplinarian, you're not setting strict boundaries, gives you a much better opportunity to connect at a deeper level without fear of having to walk a narrow line. So it opens up an environment for the children that allows them to express themselves perhaps a little more freely and to talk about their goals, ambitions, desires in a different way. And then by listening active listening, understanding what they're saying, where they're going, observing carefully what they're doing. There's the opportunity to mentor that over time and develop it into a passion that could be a lifelong passion. A clear example, I'm out with my three-year-old granddaughter and we're at a buffet brunch, and for dessert, they have a chocolate fountain. She stabs a skewer into a strawberry, dips it into the chocolate fountain for the very first time, takes a bite out of it, and I can see right then and there, her life has changed.
Right.
It's perfectly obvious. Today, at age 13, she's known in the Kraft chocolate industry as the future of Kraft chocolate.
Amazing.
And it all became possible through observation, understanding the joy that she got from it, encouraging it, supporting it, and giving her the opportunity to develop in an area that she turned out to passionately love. Mm.
What a cool story. It just shows the relationship between father and grandfather. And if they're both positive, how powerful that is, because they complement each other. And so I'm curious as to what do you think presence over perfection means, really means in real life when it comes to this stuff in the parenting world?
Yes, presence over perfection. Nice phrase. You will make mistakes. You will at times be at odds as a father and a grandfather, right? And a kid, like that will happen. And I think for me, what's most important about this is that you can learn to be present with that too. You can tolerate the fact, all people can learn to tolerate the fact that, yeah, I make mistakes. I don't, you know, that didn't feel good. And yet I can still be here right now. I can have anxiety about my work and I can still enjoy this moment with you right now. Right. And that's the number one thing. If I remind myself of that, and often actually that phrase is enough for many people just to hear like, wait, you can tolerate that. And I'll tell people this, I know you can tolerate that because, and the reason I can know that is because it's true for every person. You can tolerate that stress or that discomfort or that feeling about a mistake and still enjoy the moment. It won't be the same moment, but you can. And you can, you know, tolerate that, worry about whether you'll fall asleep because, you know, you can be sleepy the next day. Life does go on, right? So this is learning to recognize that no matter what we're doing, we can't. That's one of the keys to being present. It doesn't have to go a certain way, but I'm here. And if I'm here and I'm curious about what's going on in your world, then we're going to get somewhere. Right? In your mental model, in your, like, psychologically, what's happening for you? How does it make sense of what's going on for you? You know, if I'm curious about that, even if I'm distracted, I can be present as long as I can tolerate that thought, right? And then we're going to get somewhere. We're going to either have a good time or we'll talk about something important or we'll connect or I'll be able to help you or I'll learn something that's going to enable me to give advice. But that's where it comes from.
So on the subject of making mistakes, which is
I'm picturing a chocolate fountain exploding or something.
Exactly.
Just kidding.
So I talked about processes that I've developed over time. One of them is when we sit down for a meal, there are two things that we talk about right off the top to kick off are sitting down at the meal. One is I start by talking about a mistake I made and what I learned from it. Again, brilliant. I'm human, I make mistakes, but I learn from them. The grandchild needs to know they're going to make mistakes. We all make mistakes.
Yeah.
And that's perfectly cool as long as you learn from it. Then I talk about how I delivered value, how I gave something to someone in my life, how I helped somebody who was in trouble, how I did something to enhance the quality of somebody else's life or help them in a time of need. Then it's the grandchild's turn. Now they have permission. They understand that I'm human. I can do these things. They can do it too. And they come prepared now. They already know what they're going to talk about in terms of what mistake they made since we last were together and how they delivered value to somebody, helping a friend with their homework, whatever it might be. So that opens up the conversation and lets them know that we're human.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's perfectly okay to be human.
That's so powerful because I'm like literally having flashbacks of being a child and thinking that my dad and my grandfather were like superheroes. They knew everything. They had all the answers. They never made mistakes. Because we never talked about that stuff. I was just observing what they were doing and how hard they were working. And while I had amazing experiences with my grandfather, I don't recall those conversations of, you know, him saying, you know, I messed up today. Like, this is what happened. But I could see why that would have been so powerful if he would have, because then I feel like I would have viewed him as more human than superhuman. Right. So I think that's amazing. That's a great tool.
Yeah. Kids really do see their parents as superhuman.
And if, no pressure, right?
Even when the evidence is right there in their face that they're no or not. They really do.
Yeah.
And then it's a bit of a rude awakening once you become like 17 or 18 years old and you start to see them as humans instead of superhuman.
Isn't it? Yeah.
But then, of course, it's helpful after you get past that. But it's a nice idea to introduce that so much sooner. And, and that's something that's happening in some of the social emotional learning in certain schools now. They are also trying to really introduce that idea of fallibility and learning from mistakes. And then they're not really mistakes. It's just feedback, you know, and it's a different attitude. And it's really nice to see. I was thinking back, I didn't have conversations like that with my grandfathers, and it would have been nice to. And also, I didn't know what to talk with them about. This was once I was old enough to have conversations with them. As a little kid, I think you just play, right? And it's not a thing. You just, you know, it's the company. But once you get a little bit older, then you know, like 11 years old, 12 years old, like it's like, what are we going to talk about? And having that structure is nice. I'm also just reminded my own dad he might not bring up those conversations and questions, but he has so many of these wonderful stories. Like, you know, I had an experience, blah, 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 right? And it communicates whatever the message is that you need about how to get through this moment of life and the mistakes you can make and so forth, or the input he got or the mistake he made or something. And I've always loved that. That's something I think that parents and grandparents can do, but grandparents will have more of those stories.
Absolutely. I'm remembering a moment right now where I spilled a whole jug of sparkles on my grandpa's head, and it was in front of my parents. And I remember my parents started getting mad, and my grandpa just laughed it off and said, no, it's fine. We're just playing. Like, it's such a different dynamic, but I'll never forget that because he was just so okay with it and just wanted to have fun. And it was a pretty magical memory. I have a question though, because I'm curious as to any advice that either both of you would have giving to families navigating divorce, distance, blended families, or even strained relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it certainly increases the likelihood that you'll get your buttons pushed, right? But I think there's one dynamic, since we can't address all of it, one dynamic gets really amplified, which is that it's never the case that both parents are on exactly the same page,
Right.
right? And you can want it, but if I or my wife travels, the other one, it's some things are just simpler because there's one authority figure, right? As much as we try and we talk about it and everything, there's some things are just simpler, right? And the kids just know, oh, that's bedtime. That's what we actually mean tonight. It's something as simple as that. It's like, okay. Well, and so if you have it's then if there's a divorce, then the parents can be competing and be more concerned about what the kids think and start to lose themselves a bit. And so be less in touch with what they think matters. They also might feel antagonistic or, families that are, blended, the different like kind of dynamics you mentioned, any of those increases the likelihood that we're less on the same page. And so what I think is important to do is to recognize there's two ways we can make decisions. We can either be basing our judgments on our own criteria, our own beliefs about what's important, our own feelings, our own understanding, or we can be basing it on somebody else's. And so it's self-oriented or other-oriented when it comes to how we decide what's important and the decisions we make. And neither one of them's better. They're better in different contexts. So, what happens is we tend to forget one, and it's learning to have both in mind and say, wait a second, what do I really want here? What's important to me? And this is useful if you're public speaking. This is useful if you're doing a job interview. This is useful if you're thinking about what, car to buy. This is also useful in these family kind of negotiations, right? About how much screen time should the kid have, right? That's
Right.
sadly, a very common point of major disagreement in these contexts, right? It's my understanding goes. So what do I actually think? What do I actually want? What does this other person think? What do they actually want? What are their criteria? What are my criteria? What is actually important to me? What is actually important to them? And you can also start to get in touch with why is that important to me? Like, what does it do for me? What's the positive intention here? Well, is it just so that it's like, oh, so that I can feel respected, right? Or is it that, well, no, I really want to make sure that the kid is, doing learning to do other things besides just staring at a screen, right? And so like when you start to you gain a little clarity on that, it becomes much easier to have the right conversations and to not take it wrong when the other person does something. You can start to think about, all right, what do I have control over? Well, all right, look, their life is there's lots of people who have developed into wonderful people, even though some of the time they spent growing up wasn't ideal. Right? But what do I have control over? Okay, I have control over in the time I'm together with my kid. I want to encourage them to speak to me in a respectful way and not have so much screen time and so forth. I can communicate that to the other parent, right? And that's my desire. But if I feel like it needs to happen, or if I'm starting to interpret it as a comment on me, that's where it's hard. And so it starts with allowing myself to be aware of both. What are my criteria and what are their criteria? And choosing in this particular case, what do I want to, who do I want to base my decision on? It's a choice when you become aware of it. If I go to the dentist, I want to base it entirely on the dentist's, expertise. Do I need a cavity filled or not? This is not like something that I want to really say, no, I don't feel like it.
No.
Right. But if I'm talking about
Exactly.
something about parenting, I have a lot of intuitive, right? That, there is a lot of information, but I'm also aware that this kid, I want my kid to feel like, they're not pulled in a million directions. So I at least want to be thinking about what's important to the other one. So arm yourself with that information. Like go into a decision and just try to always be aware of both. What's important to the other person and what's important to me. And then I'll go about starting to have the right conversations or thinking about what I want to do. Is that too vague or is that helpful?
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. Perry, what do you think?
So I haven't had any experience up to this point of having to be a grandparent to kids in a divorce. family. I think just as not having lifetime experience, life experience in that area, that's an opportunity for a grandparent to step up and to take a more active role and to be more present, more available, and to help in every way possible to support the family. Not 100%. To pass judgment, not to pick sides, not to in any way talk negative about either parent at any time in front of the children. That's just not acceptable. The kids are going to need us more in those times. And we have to be present. We have to be available. We have to be non-judgmental. And we have to model a certain behavior that shows that the world around us does things that we don't control. The kids certainly can't control that their parents are separating, but they certainly can control the way they respond to it. And we can help them with that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I would want to do, is to help them in any way possible to understand that they can control their feelings. They can't control the situation.
And now, if you had strong opinions, though, about one side in the divorce being right and the other side being in the wrong, how would you manage that? How would you still show up and be that non-judgmental support as a grandparent?
So I'm funny that way. I respect everything you do, Josh, tremendously. However, I would have a lot of difficulty expressing any negativity about a parent to the child. I just wouldn't be comfortable doing that. And I never want to be critical of a father or a mother in that situation. I couldn't do that. It's just not who I am.
Makes sense. That makes sense. So before we wrap up today, I was just curious as to what you want. What is your hope that the listeners will take away from today's conversation?
Well, my hope is that fathers and grandfathers will take this as an invitation to explore something that they've been wanting to have more of in their life and maybe just didn't either give themselves permission to do or feel like it was possible or know how to do. Maybe they've been doing it somewhat, but I want to invite them to start thinking of this as a skill. You know, I referenced once earlier, it's like playing in the playoffs, right? This is a pretty amazing, very complex thing that we do. And there really is so much nuance and skill to it. And, you know, here's this opportunity, right? To be a friend and a leader, to be someone who is a role model, to be able to, you know, harmonize the household, to support your partner. This is an opportunity to make decisions about what relationship do I want to have with my parents and with my kids? What relationship do I want them to have? And then for grandfathers too, to say, wait a second, I have a choice here. Life can happen, or I can do this. Does this really matter to me? And so I invite everyone listening to say, okay, wait a second. Does this matter to me? Here, these two guys are saying, you know, that you can do things a little bit differently. You can step into this role. There are tools for quickly understanding other people and helping to make the changes you want to see. There are tools for getting your own head into a place where you can be who you want to be and be present. You know, there are guidelines, there are stories, there are things that we actually can do. And use this as just kind of like that little bit of extra motivation to say, all right, I'm interested, hopefully also to want to buy the books and use those as guides, right? But even without that, you know, to say, yeah, you know what, I'm going to start playing with this a little bit more. I'm going to own that desire.
From my perspective, I would like the folks listening or watching this podcast to think about the legacy that they want to leave. At this stage in my life, I think a lot about legacy and the value that I want to deliver to my grandchildren to give them the tools that can last a lifetime for them, well beyond the time I'm here, and the power that I have to give them, the critical thinking skills, the love, the mentoring that can help them become the successful, and by successful, I'm not talking about economic success. I'm talking about succeeding in life, the successful life that they so richly deserve to attain the goals that they have in mind, and to give them the tools and the motivation, the support to live life in the most beneficial way possible for them. That's such a powerful thing that grandfathers have the ability to do, and to support the parents at the same time, in that by being the best grandfather you can be, you're helping the parents tremendously, providing an enormous amount of support and enabling them to be better parents.
Absolutely. Well, thank you guys so much. The time flew by. It was such a powerful conversation. Thanks so much for being here today and for having this conversation. It was so awesome.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you guys. And to our audience, this conversation is such a beautiful reminder that children don't need perfect families. They need present people, people who listen, people who show up, and people who create emotional safety, wisdom, encouragement, laughter, memories, and most importantly, love. So we want to personally thank Dr. Josh Davis and Perry Solomon for joining us and for sharing such powerful insight. We're going to make sure to have both Josh's book and Perry's book in the show notes for you guys to check out. And if this episode resonated with you, share it with a father, a grandfather, parent, or mentor who helped shape your life. Because sometimes the greatest legacy we leave behind is the ones that we share with other people. So stay tuned for the next episode. And thanks so much for tuning in, everyone. Until next time, take care. Bye for now.